This is our first story. It's a conversation between a child and a river. Now, some of you may imagine that a river can't speak. So how could I be telling a story about this conversation? But others of you will remember that rivers speak all the time. If we only listen, they gurgle and they trickle. Sometimes they roar with a mighty sound. So in this story, the child is playing by his favorite river, a kind of small, comfortably sized river that winds between the field and back of his house. The child has a favorite spot to sit, on top of a big rock, next to some willowy bushes.
Well, river, here I am again, ready for another chat. I've come back to my favorite spot, on my favorite rock, and I'm just about ready to step into my favorite river in the whole wide world.
Wait just a minute, the river cries. You can't do that. Don't you know you can't step in the same river twice?
What? What are you talking about? I come here all the time and step into your cool waters over and over, way more than twice.
So it may feel like the same river to you, but it's not. I, the river, change all the time, and really you do too. I am in constant motion, so even though it's the same rock you're sitting on and the same shrub you're sitting next to, I'm not the same river. I never am. You can't step in the same river twice.
That feels a little scary. Is that how it should feel?
Well, that's up to you. All I can tell you is that when it comes to this river, nothing is ever the same.
Is that it?
Well, and nothing or not everything will be different.
So you're telling me that nothing will ever be the same and everything will be different?
Yes. And also that how you respond to it is what makes all the difference. The child looked at the river and said with some concern,
I guess I'll have to keep you posted on that.
We'll wait and see. On this beautiful spring morning, finally the sun outside and the blue sky, we're thinking together about the stories we tell and why we tell stories and how we visit them and the fact that every time we hear them, just like every time we sit beside a river, they will be different, even though they are the same story. Because every time we visit a story, we are different. We change all the time. We're a little older. We've had some new experiences. And we bring new insights into those stories, even the ones that we hear again and again. So even though it feels like nothing will be different, in fact, when we're paying attention, nothing is ever the same. We're going to share some traditional stories this morning, keeping in mind how we might hear them slightly differently. So we start with the story of Passover, which is the story that our Jewish friends are sharing and retelling this time of year. It's the story of an unlikely hero named Moses. Some of our young people have been studying Moses' life the last couple months, how he was saved as a child and raised as a prince in Egypt, how he learned about his Jewish identity as a young man, and how he saw that his people were not being treated well in a way that he had not recognized before. Our children learned about his leaving Egypt and then being called back to bring his people out of slavery, called back by a burning bush that spoke to him. The voice that had no name and said, I am what I am. And when the voice told him to go back and bring the Jewish people out of slavery, Moses said, who, me? Have you ever been asked to do something that you felt unprepared for? This story reminds us that Moses really wasn't anxious to be a hero. I stutter, he said. You'd be better off with my brother Aaron. He's clever. But according to the story, he does go. And after a lot of troubles and resistance from the Pharaoh, who was the ruler of the Egyptians, troubles like when Pharaoh refuses to let the Jewish people go and frogs and locusts and hail are sent, and the terrible cost of the firstborn of the Egyptians, when finally Pharaoh does eventually let the people of Moses go. And then, once free, they wander and wander for years and years in the desert to find the promised land, the land that I Am said would be theirs, with Moses trying to lead these people who weren't so anxious to be led either. Can you imagine being wanderers with no set path other than the idea of a promised land? Who might you be willing to follow? Sometimes when we hear this story, we might be thinking of the slave who is longing for freedom. Or sometimes we might feel like Moses, a little afraid of being the leader, a little confused by whether we really have the right skills or enough courage. Sometimes we might be the Pharaoh, clinging to life as he knew it. But the fact is that every time we hear it, if we're paying attention, we learn something new about the story, but more importantly, about ourselves. That's the best reason to tell them again and again. What do you hear about yourself in this ancient myth of liberation? I'm going to find my place in just a moment. Okay, so the third story we're going to share today is a visit to the Christian tradition. The story of Easter, which means spring, actually. The word Easter from Old English, it refers to the ancient goddess of fertility. The observance of Easter is linked to Passover by its symbolism of freedom and its date in the calendar, which are both in the springtime. Easter is, or can be, a sort of complicated story for us as Unitarian Universalists, who do not generally believe in the resurrection, a body coming back to life after a person has died. And we do not generally believe Jesus was a different Son of God in any way that is different from how we believe all children are of a loving source, a source of life renewing itself. But we are immersed in a culture that celebrates Easter, even if it has lost some of the religious meaning. So it's useful to visit the story and see where we find connection with it. I remember a British author, Philip Pullman, who wrote The Golden Compass, referred to himself as a Church of England atheist. He framed his disbelief in the understandings and rituals of that church. So we who come out, many of us, out of the Protestant and Catholic traditions, filled with talk about, we remember Jesus' birth, filled with symbols of his future, of angels and wise men traveling to visit this special child. And we remember his youth and the time his family traveled to Jerusalem for the Passover Seder. They left without him, kind of like Home Alone. They went back to Jerusalem and found him studying in the temple with the elders, and he said, "Where else would I be?" And then we learn of the beginning of his ministry at about 30 years of age. It was a short-lived ministry, just 3 years or so, according to the story. He had learned all about the laws of his tradition, about being an observant religious Jewish man, but one time he was in the temple on a Saturday, which is the Jewish holy day, the Sabbath. And you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath. The law is, it is a day of rest. The leaders asked him if it was okay to cure on the Sabbath. Is it okay to help someone get well? A man was there with a withered hand, it says in the scriptures, and they asked him, "Is it lawful to cure on the Sabbath?" And he said, "Suppose one of you has only one sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath. Will you not lay hold of it and lift it out?" How much more valuable is a human being than a sheep? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. His story gets a little confusing for us, perhaps. I think he thought people had gotten absorbed by the rules and forgotten about the love from I Am that was the reason for the rules in the first place. According to the parables, which are the way Jesus taught through small stories, he believed that a healthy spiritual life was more important than anything, more important than a big house or lots of clothes, more important than being right or judging others when we are just as imperfect ourselves. His passion, as we saw it in the stories, was huge. According to the story, his willingness to set aside his own needs in order to share his message was inspiring to those who lived and worked with him. But it got him in trouble. There were leaders who did not want him to have so much power. We know that in the story, he was crucified, which is one way that criminals were killed in those days. And the story tells us that since he died on Friday, his body needed a place to be stored. It couldn't be buried on the Sabbath. So they put his body in a big cave and rolled a big stone in front of it, intending to come back on Sunday and bury him. And when they came back to prepare his body on Sunday, the cave was open, the stone rolled aside, and no one there. And that is the mystery. So where do we find ourselves in this story? What river are we stepping in this year at this time in our lives? Are we a follower of his teachings to recognize the log in our own eye before we judge the speck in our neighbors? Or are we a little frustrated that maybe he's trying to tell us how to behave a bit too much? Or are we indifferent to the teachings that say, find your peace in that which is greater than you? Or perhaps we're encouraged to think that something greater than us alone actually exists. Every time we hear this story, we have the chance to discover something new about the message and ourselves. So the question again is, where do you find yourself in this story at this point in your life? It's a puzzle for us, and how we respond, just like the river, can make all the difference. Our final story this morning happens after the tomb is found empty. For Unitarian Universalists, this is the tricky part, perhaps. We can follow along with the story of Jesus up to Friday pretty easily, the pre-Easter Jesus, as he is often referred to. It's the post-Easter Jesus we tend to set aside. So this last story is especially poignant for communities of people who enjoy good food at their coffee hours. I think that might resonate with many of you here. While you nourish your bodies, you nourish your souls by taking the time to visit with each other about all the sweet downs and ups of everyday life. I wonder if you're familiar with the parable from the Gospel of Luke that takes place on the road to Emmaus. Ring a bell for anybody? A few? Two of Jesus' followers, his disciples, are walking on the road to Emmaus, which is a town about 7 miles from Jerusalem. The story says that they're in conversation trying to figure out, like, what just happened? How are we supposed to make sense of this? And they notice a man who comes by and starts walking with them. What are you talking about? He asks. And they look at him like, what are you, crazy? Don't you know what's been going on around here? The story would have us know that it's Jesus, of course, and yet the disciples don't recognize him. Still, they walk with him through the day and until almost evening when they arrive at their home. Jesus starts to continue on, but they say, no, come in. It's late in the day, it's evening, the day is spent, come have a meal with us. So they still have not recognized Jesus, and they don't until they sit down together to dinner, and he breaks the bread, and as he blesses it, as the story goes, they recognize him. It says their eyes were opened. And then he vanishes from their sight. It gives us a lot of questions, of course. Is it believable? I don't really believe in people disappearing. Does it make sense that someone would show up and talk for a while, sit down to eat, and then vanish? On the other hand, something special does happen when we take the time to sit down and share food with each other, doesn't it? It's always about more than the food itself. And it might even make us question who it is that's missing from our tables. I wonder if you find yourself anywhere in this story, lost in current events, perhaps, and wondering how to make sense of them, wishing someone you loved so much that you learned from, perhaps, might be present to you, if only for a bit, to help you understand the world, make sense of it. And maybe in some way, there is hope in that. So our stories have found us in a particular location in our lives, a particular place in the river of our being. Today, April 5th, 2015, with all its complexity, its beauty, its challenges, both personal and cultural, with our personal joys and sorrows, with our collective uncertainties, nuclear talks with Iran, equality pact, politics in Indiana, climate change the world over. The Passover celebration is quite prescribed, so that every year when the story is told in Jewish homes at the Seder, certain things are remembered. The salt water that represents the tears of the ancestors, the egg that represents both fertility and mourning, the bitter herbs of servitude, the shank bone that is the reminder of both Jewish freedom and Egyptian loss. Where do you find yourself this year in this river of story? It's hard not to be reminded, perhaps, that freedom came at someone's expense. But lest we judge, let us look to our own privilege and determine who is paying for our bounty. The story is a reminder that freedom is complicated and that ultimately our own freedom is not an ending in and of itself. As individuals, as a human race, we are still wandering in a desert, searching for the promised land, still struggling that all people might be free. And in the river of our Christian story, we know that much of the Christian world celebrates this Easter Sunday in a particular way, which, for the most part, we UUs don't. For the most part, we don't think of Jesus as being the same substance as whatever our construct of God. We think of him as a man, a prophet, who taught and walked with everyone he was serving, and we don't often think of him, or we do often think of him, as a good example of a way to live. We don't think his body rose anywhere after death. We believe that when things die, they do not come back to life, except as we have loved them and continue to in our hearts. We don't celebrate his suffering or imagine suffering as a particular path to the holy, though we do leave space for mystery to be with us in our times of need, when we're sad or confused or lonely, or in our times of celebration and joy. And I think we can find a lesson for ourselves in Easter. There's a story of longing for connection with all things outside of the bounds of rules and laws, and a freedom through a love that binds us to our common humanity, that raises up our ability to hope. Here's what Newton's law of gravity assures us, that what goes up must come down, right? Here's what Easter's story might assure us, that what goes down can come back up, like a ball or a flower or our very tender souls, that love prevails. Easter assures us that after the sadness, there can be joy. After the pain, there can be healing. That even after the loss, there can be gratitude. The Easter message reminds us that love will always hold us up. As we gather in life's journey, may we be sustained by the awareness of our wandering and the knowledge of our need to be found. May we see and be seen, each and every one of us, with all our faults and our idiosyncrasies. May we know that we can love and we can be loved. Sometimes that is the hardest lesson. Find your place in the river of these timeless stories and use that arrival as the sustenance that can guide you towards understanding and wholeness. It's a journey, and every time we step in the river, it can be a rebirth. Maybe we can say hallelujah to that.